Hi, I'm Alfie Beau, and I'm playing Jean Valjean in Les Miserables, played in the West End and on Broadway and the 25th anniversary celebration. It is a bit of a challenge to sing Bring Him Home, I've got to say, because it's a very emotional song, so you have to really get yourself in the right frame of mind to do it and really connect with where you are in the story, where you are as a character. You have to understand every single word, more than the actual tune. I think if you believe what you're saying, the tune comes along with it. You work from where you are emotionally. If you're feeling vocally tired, physically tired, then you work with that to portray the song, and the song works with you. So that brings out a different colour. If you're feeling energised, if you're feeling rested and fighting fit and you feel strong, then you use those moments in the song to portray it, and it works. And I am old and will be gone. Bring Him Home means everything to me. It's a song that has changed my life. It's opened the doors to many concert opportunities, record opportunities, collaborations with people, playing on Broadway and in the West End. People say, you must have sung Bring Him Home so many times now, and do you ever get fed up of it? And I never do, because it's beautiful. When a song has changed your life and done so much for you, you don't tire of that. It's a little jewel in my bag that I hold very close to my heart.
I'm Becky Douglas, and I am the founder and the chairman of Rising Star Outreach. I am also a mother. I have 10 children, and my oldest daughter was Amber. My daughter Amber was severely bipolar, and part of being bipolar for her was that she had just obsessions with things, and one of the things that she was obsessed with was Broadway. And so she saw all the Broadway plays multiple times, but her very, very favorite was Les Mis. Amber was under treatment by various doctors, and they had a hard time getting her disease under control. She was young. This happened between the ages of 18 and 26, but she was in and out of a number of mental institutions a number of times trying to get this disease under control. And usually the thing that sent her to one of these institutions was another suicide attempt. Normally when these kind of events happened, she would down a bottle of pills and then would go incommunicado, and we wouldn't know where she was or how to reach her. When I was waiting in those dark hours for someone to find her or for her to choose to communicate with us so we could get her the help that she needed, because she and I had sat through so many performances of Les Mis, the song Bring Him Home just came to me. It became my prayer, honestly. I turned it into my own, and in desperation would just say, bring her home. So many times when we thought we had lost her and there was no hope, miraculously, something would happen and she would be spared, and we were able to get to her in time to get her the medical attention she needed and work with her again. But eventually, that luck ran out, and she eventually ended up taking her own life.
I'm Jeremy Summerlee, and I'm Director of Music at St. Peter's College, Oxford. It's a remarkable song, Bring Him Home, and it's a song without words, which might sound a bit odd because you will associate it with voice, but actually, this was written before the words. Now, that's quite unusual, and certainly in the classical world which I inhabit, it's almost unthinkable that a composer could write a tune and then somebody could put some words to it afterwards. Almost unthinkable, but that's what happened in this case. Because it's important to realise that this wasn't in the original French production. And so you have the French version, then it comes to London, Royal Shakespeare Company, Cameron Mackintosh, at the Barbican. Trevor Nunn decides they need this extra song, and Claude-Michel Schönberg goes, OK, and writes a tune, this tune. He sets up a very slow harmonic rhythm. It's not really moving very much. It's very French. This is what the French have been doing since right back to the 16th century. A British composer, particularly a German composer, they're very concerned with argument, they're very concerned with narrative, they're very concerned with where it's going. Whereas a French composer goes, oh, and even better, oh. You know, each one is like a mouthful of the most delicately cooked steak you can imagine, with the best sauce on top of it, accompanied by the best glass of Burgundy you've ever had. And we can just stay here for as long as we like. And that's what Schönberg sets up right from the start. Right from the start, it's pleasant, it's beautiful, it's prayerful, it's yearning, it's all the good stuff. But it's not home. That's what this song is all about. It's about resolution, bringing him home. He takes us through a variety of chords. He opens up the tonal space all the way through the song until eventually we come home. I found it very difficult to believe when I got to know this song first that the music was composed first and the words were put on afterwards, because the word painting in terms of the harmony is brilliant. Now, for Herb Kretzmer to have done that, to work out that was the best way of setting this song, I think is utterly brilliant.
My name is Herbert Kretzmer. That song gave me more trouble than any other song in the entire show. It loomed and lingered above our heads like a scary spectre. What I had in front of me was the music and a code name called Night Thoughts. It comes at the barricades, when Valjean, the nobleman, comes across for the first time this boy who has usurped him in the affections of his daughter. He's at the barricades. The boy's life is in danger. The boy could easily die, and die that night at the barricades, because they were in a fearsome situation. What mattered most was that this boy, who loved his daughter and to whom he now transferred that love, should live for the sake of the daughter. It was only about his Christianity, his altruism. And I didn't know what to do about it. And then one night at about midnight, our co-director, John Caird, as he left my house after another futile night trying to break this puzzle, said 6 words to me that opened the doors and opened the windows and made the song possible. He said, "Sounds to me like a prayer." And of course, it was a prayer. And when I finally found the solution, it came like sugar pie, easy. And I wrote the song quite literally within about 2 or 3 hours. Funny that a convinced atheist should have written a song which depends for its efficiency as a show song on a certain religious truth. And yet I did feel those words. I didn't have to believe in God, but I had to believe in Valjean's belief in God.
My name's Rebecca Kane, and I originated the role of Cosette in the first English language production of Les Miserables at the Royal Shakespeare Company and then in the West End in 1985. I sang as an opera singer for many, many years and didn't sing musical theatre for a long, long time. But I began to do a lot of recitals and concerts. And because I'm so associated with Les Mis, I needed to find something that I could sing to the audience. And I discovered that Bring Him Home was set in a baritone key, which very much suited the soprano voice. So I began to put that into my concerts. Singing Bring Him Home for me is about many things. First of all, it's very humbling to have played a small part in something that has gone on to become so meaningful to so many people. So for me, it has great history. I also never had children, so when I sing that line, he's like the son I might have known if God had granted me a son, that means a lot to me too. And it's just very moving to be able to have a connection to something, to then be able to sing that to people and to see them so moved, and to know what a life this song has gone on to have outside the show. And we'll be gone. I'm originally a Canadian, and at least once a year now I go back and I tour, and I've sung in every province and territory bar Quebec and the Yukon. I have many memories, but there's one in particular when I sang at a fisherman's church on an ice lake up in the Arctic Circle. It was a church that looked like an upside-down boat. And I remember it was March, so that the light had changed, and it was coming through these windows. And I looked out into the audience, and there were about a third First Nations people. And they were dressed in the hoods with the fur on them and the muckluck shoes. And they had tears rolling down their face during Bring Him Home, as did the father, the vicar who ran this church. I start to choke up just talking about it, really. It's about self-sacrifice. You know, the final words of Les Mis are, to love another person is to see the face of God. And however you interpret that, and whoever your God is, it is about loving other people more than you love yourself. Let him be. It's quite difficult because your response when you see people crying is to cry yourself. But of course, the last thing you need to do, technically, is to have a high larynx. And so when we say there's a lump in my throat, that's actually what you're feeling, is your larynx coming up high and you need to keep it low. So I really have to grit my teeth and a lot of the time look over the heads of the people that are crying in the audience so I don't also choke up.
My name's Frank Pearson, and I'm the secretary for the Greater Manchester Police Male Voice Choir. Whilst in the police, you start to realise that it is an organisation somewhat special. You very much feel part of a large family where you feel each other's pain and losses, particularly so when colleagues are seriously injured or on occasions actually killed in the line of duty.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. The funeral has taken place of PC Dave Phillips, the Merseyside officer who was knocked down by a pickup truck while on duty in Wallasey last month. Hundreds of police officers from across the UK lined the route of the funeral cortege as it made its way to Liverpool's Anglican Cathedral.
When I first heard the news, I remember thinking to myself, oh no, not another. I felt very upset, not just that Dave Phillips was no longer with us, but he also had a very young family. I think many a police officer would say, there but for the grace of God, go I. When you walk out of that door on whatever shift, you do always wonder what that shift will hold for you. Apparently Dave was a very big fan of Les Mis, so much so that he was due very shortly after his death to have attended the production again down in London. The choir were contacted by the family and we were asked if we would sing Bring Him Home at the funeral. On the day of the funeral, the choir were arranged in a V formation right at the front of the altar. We took our places a good 30 minutes before the start of the funeral service. And from there we could see the police officer who had paraded through the centre of Liverpool, coming in through the back of the church and filling up the pews and the aisles of what is a large cathedral. A sea of uniformed colleagues from the front all the way to the back. Realising that very shortly we were about to sing our tribute to Dave, it was something that, yes, was emotionally charged, but also meant an awful lot to each and every choir member. Something that runs through every police officer's family's mind. Please, Lord, bring him home at the end of every shift.
Amber had had no episodes for almost a year, and we thought maybe we had actually overcome this, and we had finally found the magical solution through all these different drugs and all these different therapies. But here, suddenly, her car wasn't in the driveway. And again, I immediately began to pray, and part of that prayer was this song. Wherever she is, bring her home. Just bring her home. And then a few hours later, there was a knock at my front door, and it was two policemen. And I knew as soon as I opened the door that their message was not going to be good. And they came in, and they said, we're so sorry to tell you, but your daughter was found dead this morning in her car. So that's how it ended. The hardest thing about that is that, you know, we have 10 children, And Amber was very close with the other children, and they had all prayed and prayed for her and tried everything in their power to help her through these hard times. And when she was struggling, she would turn to the children. They seemed to be her comfort. But I happened to have a number of them upstairs. This was right after school. They were upstairs in one of the bedrooms playing together. So I think probably the hardest thing I ever did in my life was climb those stairs and go in that room and tell these kids that their sister had just died. So, you know, it's something that impacted the entire family. You can't go through the loss of someone you love with your whole heart and not be in pain.
Go.
The other important thing about Bring Him Home is it's unique in Les Mis in that it was actually written for a particular person. So you have the French version, then it comes to London. Colin Wilkinson has already been signed up, so it's actually very specifically written for him. So how is it to sing? The answer is quite high, quite difficult.
Let him rest.
I'm going to make an enormous generalisation. I'm going to say that if you have a high tenor aria in grand opera, it's generally going to be quite loud. It's going to raise the roof, and it's going to end with a big dramatic cadence with the tenor going for it. This is a tenor aria, and at no point does it ever get beyond that point of being a prayer ballad. I think that's an intensely moving thing to do. When you have a singer that you know has more, but you don't hear them using it. It's rather like hearing a choir of 1,000 voices just singing piano. You know that they could, if they opened up, nail you to the back wall of the concert hall, but there's nothing more moving. And I think that's why this aria is moving, because it's always kept under wraps. It is a prayer, but it's a willful, internalised prayer.
Well, when we went through her things, we found that she had been sending part of the money we gave her for college every month to donate to a little orphan in India, which really didn't surprise us that much, honestly. She had done a number of things. She's just, I think maybe because she suffered so much, she just had a tender spot for the underdog, and she was always having classes at our house for multi-personality women or for people who struggled that she would meet in the mental hospital. She'd bring them home to us when they were dismissed and ask us to house them in our home, and we had a number of them in our home. So we weren't that surprised, but as we thought about it, we thought, you know, maybe instead of having our friends send flowers to her funeral, we should just ask them to send donations to this little orphanage. And enough money was sent in that this orphanage asked me to be on their board of directors. So I thought, okay, if I'm going to be on this board, maybe I better go to India and see what it is I'm doing. So I went to India to see this orphanage. They had 54 little children, and they pretty much had what they needed. But every day, as we would go from my hotel to the orphanage and back again in a car, these beggars with, you know, hands, sometimes no feet, no eyes, open, gaping wounds, you know, some of them with pus running down their arms. I mean, I just can't even describe these people. They would crawl up to the car or just sort of engulf the car at the stoplights, begging. I had just never seen anything like it. Those images in particular.